All right. Hey, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I'm Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network. www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. July the 20th, 2026. Shoo, beautiful day here on the east side of the country. I hope it's great wherever you are at. It actually is beautiful. I mean, we have gone through some heat and some smoke and some more heat and some humidity. And today it seems like we're getting a little reprieve from all of them. It is beautiful out, low humidity. I mean, I'm sure it's going to get warmed up. It was hot. I ran this morning. I've really been trying to focus on running, trying to do it every day. Taking a break on the weekends, even though I ran yesterday, but really just trying to, I don't know, get back into it. I used to love running. I've had to lower my expectations a bit. But I've been doing it. Ran 2 miles this morning. I walked a little bit, walking a lot less. No real reason for the walking other than my mind telling me I need to. You know, I'm not that exhausted. I'm not that tired. I have this sort of idea that if I walk a little bit, I'm giving myself a break, some sort of reward. And I don't think I'm doing myself any favor. I mean, whatever, it's worked, but I have, like today I try to push, I have a sort of a route, and the route I take in this route, there's certain points where I just know I walk, and I'm trying to run through those points, at least, you know, run through the point of usual walking and try to maybe walk at a different spot. It's mental madness is what it is, but I did it this morning, and I ran through parts I would typically walk, and I walked in parts I typically run, and but I feel good. I lost weight. My wife said, "You look like you lost weight." I was like, "God, I hope so." I mean, I've only been, you know, working at this for a while now. And I don't even know. I don't think I've actually lost any weight. I think I've just sort of gotten better shape. I've been doing that kettlebell workout, which has really been nice. I did it yesterday. It is weird. If you are, you know, listen, I'm not a fitness guy. If you're in that same boat, right, still kind of stuck, try the little kettlebell workout. It really actually has changed a lot, and it addresses some of the issues I don't like messing with, like core, like abs, right? And it's been kind of cool. So, you know, check it out. I do 4 exercises. I'm not even going to tell you what they are. But it's been able to kick me out of the slump I was in, this little rut. And so I feel good. It's been a great weekend. Man, lots been going on. Been very busy over the last few weeks with my daughter's birthday and family and the 4th of July and all this and that. And oh my God, all the stuff going on. And it's been crazy. I ended up, I needed to get a new car. Needed is questionable, but I do lease cars, and this lease was up. So it left me with a lot of options. I could buy this lease out. I could turn it in and buy a cheap piece of crap for no money. Or I could turn it in and lease another nice car. And that's what I chose to do. But not I downgraded. I was driving this really nice Jeep. I don't even know how I got in this Jeep. That salesman was like a wizard, man. He freaking pulled some sorcery, and I ended up in this really nice Jeep for a low payment. And it wasn't a low payment, but it's low compared to the payment I have now. And it was great, but for some reason, my miles went over, whatever. Not really a part of recovery. Just, you know, benefits of staying sober, right? You get to do things. You get to buy stuff. And I had to take in this car, and I got a new car. And I downsized, I downgraded because I was like, I shouldn't even be driving this fancy car, right? And it was just, it's a Jeep Grand Cherokee, but it was a Overland. And I used to, you know, it's like my 5th Jeep I've had. And so I always get, the limited, the simple, you know, the commoner's car, the kind of car that's for people like myself. And this Overland, man, it took me to another level. And But the days of the Overland are over. I got my Limited back. But I brought it home on Friday, and the freaking thing broke. It broke down. It broke on the way home. It didn't break down. I got home, but like these lights came on, the check engine light, the window stopped going down. All of these problems started happening, and by the time I got home, it was having a real issue. And so, of course, I had to take it back on Saturday. I had to take it back, and I'm like, you know what? I want a new car. This car is a piece of shit. And I'm like, you know, you can't be rude about this, Tom. You gotta, you know, you gotta keep your cool. And I did, but I made it very clear. I don't want this car. This car has too many gremlins, too many devils, too many demons in it. And he's like, just give us a chance to fix it. And I go, I don't want it. Well, I got a text this morning saying, you know, the guy introducing himself telling me that he is my guy servicing my car this morning, right? Smith, Chip Away at the Stone, greatest album. God, excuse me, I'm still God, I'm still dealing with this freaking cold I got going to Albuquerque. I guess I'm not going back there. I'm getting better, but man, I'm still and I ran this morning. So, but this album is one of the first albums that I got that was sort of a heavy metal rock band, Aerosmith live bootleg. And I was a huge Aerosmith fan. I mean, I remember learning about Aerosmith because of the Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band movie with Bee Gees. And Aerosmith came out of the floor singing Come Together. And I was like, oh my God. It was like, back then he was sort of like, well, I don't compare him to, he was the first Axl Rose, right? Steven Tyler. He was the first Axl, and then, of course, Axl, I feel like it was based on Steven Tyler. But regardless, they were very awesome. Love both, but great album. So, yeah, I thought I would come upstairs. It's been, a lot's been going on. I really don't have too much to talk about today. I just wanted to come up and sort of address whatever demons were telling me that a podcast would not be necessary today because, I wanted to do one. You know, a buddy of mine, it's kind of funny. One of the things for me, at least in recovery, especially having, you know, been doing it for a while, is the people that I run into from my past as a kid, as a young teenager, as a young adult, and my addiction and you know, how I think about, you know, when I was in 10th grade meeting my buddies, you know, Mason Jeff, right? And we were in guitar together, and then Mason Jeff introduced me to their friend Steve and to their friend, you know, Scott, and all these great guys that I would slowly become friends with. And, you know, and then my choices, you know, at the back in those days, just all of us doing a lot of drinking and smoking weed, and then maybe adventuring into a little of this or a little of that, but really all keeping it into the alcohol and weed. And we did that for, you know, quite a while. And then certain people started to venture out and started to break away. And I'd be one of those, you know. I started to get into some harder drugs and then eventually moving out to California. But as that transition happened, I had a lot of big problems with friends. My buddy Scott, my buddy Steve, really all of my friends, really, because that's really when this side of me started to show up, this real asshole side that under the influence of alcohol, with just enough in me, I would turn on you. And I would say things and behave in ways that, you know, we wouldn't typically do to a regular friend. And so issues started to happen. You know, I remember making comments to my buddy Scott about his girlfriend. He was like, "I'm going to fucking kick your ass." I'm like, "Uh-oh." I was like, "Fuck that, man." You know, whatever. I'm sure I was drunk and didn't care. But I said something that was really, you know, inappropriate. And you know, of course, I'm, what, 17? Who cares? I think about it now and I have some embarrassment. And we worked it out. But it was then when I started to realize what I was, you know, under the influence, I could be a little different. So fast forward, you know, Scott's dead, right? A lot of my friends have really, in a weird, strange way, gotten worse than me, right? Because in 1997, I hit a wall and decided to get sober, but a lot of people I know didn't hit walls, right? I remember living in Vernon East and talking to my buddy Scott, who was walked the straight and narrow, no drugs. He did drink, but he didn't smoke any weed because he was freaking great on guitar, right? He was so good on guitar, and he was so, you know, he had such a routine, and he wasn't going to screw it up with drugs and alcohol. And I remember talking to him. I was over in Easton, and I had moved. I was in Maryland. He was still in New Mexico, and I would still stay in contact with him. And, you know, he was depressed, and he was over-drinking, and he was in a lot of pain. He was taking pain pills, and he died. He died of an overdose of pain pills and alcohol. Wouldn't have never thought he would die, right? Never thought that. My buddy James. I'm trying to be careful with names. People like to give me shit, so I'm just going to be really careful. But my buddy James, you know, he had his shit together. And the last time I talked to him, he was too drunk during the day. I couldn't even, when I had gone to visit Albuquerque a couple times ago, I couldn't even connect with him. He was too drunk. And then a buddy of mine was telling me when I was in the town just recently, he was like, "Yeah, he's blind and drunk. Blind and drunk, right?" And, you know, at this point, at this stage in his life, you know, these are people that I would have never expected. And another buddy of mine, I'll call him Evitz, him and I drank a lot together. I've talked about him in this podcast. We were very mean to one another. Our sarcasm, it's probably came up in a sarcasm podcast, but our sarcasm would cut deep, and we would go after each other at our throats, making fun of each other. And he came out to visit me here. He lives down south now, and he's had it rough. He's had it rough. I know that, you know, I'm not going to be critical of him. I think he took the same path I would have had I not gotten sober, which is just kind of drinking and bouncing along, really. You know, not going completely under, but never really able to take off and take full advantage of us, you know, people that are that aren't under the influence. And he came up to visit, and he was doing his thing, and, you know, he reached out, and he said he got sober, and I was really, you know, I was like, "I'm so proud of you, man." You know, who'd have thought, right? Who'd have thought that he'd be telling me, the biggest drunk of them all, that he was getting sober? Well, he reached out to me recently, and he's like, I'm not drinking, but I'm having a lot of trouble. I'm having a hard time. I don't remember. Whatever this disease has doesn't let me remember some of the tough times in early recovery. You know, and I'll say it, and I've said it before, you know, alcoholism is a relationship. It's a character defect. It's a habit. It's a behavior. There's a buildup. There's a plateau. There's a letdown. There's a hole. It's like every. It's like being in a relationship with a nutcase. And I've had those too, right? And those things break up, and then you sit there going, "Man, I wonder how the nutcase is doing." Well, it's the same thing with alcohol. I know coming into the program, actually coming, just not drinking anymore. I wasn't quite sure what to expect, right? I mean, who knew? I hadn't lived that life for quite a while, so I really didn't know what to expect. And I think that's what, you know, meetings are so good for. When I came into this program the first day, I remember I was so excited. I've shared, you know, when the guy came up, found me in the hospital, I spent my 5 days. During my 5 days there, I met a lady who offered an outpatient program if I choose to go to it. And it was on every Thursdays at 7 o'clock, and I went. And that was also part of the beginning of me trying to figure out what life was like, not under the influence of alcohol. And I would meet, and we'd meet on Thursdays, and that's where I met my buddy Rick and my buddy Tim and all these other great people. And it started to not just replace the life that I had previously had, but actually started to give me a life of something that I had never even known of. I mean, I went from, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, maybe starting to smoke weed, 15, 16, maybe drink a little beer, 17, drinking beer. You know, I never really knew what it was like to be a young adult, not under the influence. And so going to that first outpatient program and meeting these guys and then, you know, be given a task, you know, think about this. We'll talk about this next week. And I'm like, oh, my God, right now I'm in it. We're all doing this together. And we did it together for a year. And then we graduated. And I remember my parents coming to that thing. And I spoke. And I don't know what I said. I just babbled. And I felt, you know, and I know out of all of the struggles that I'd ever had, finally my parents were like, okay. Always, I think, in the back of their mind, thinking, this will never work. But it did for that time, right? And I started to go to these meetings. I remember I'd go to work, and I'd come home and get a shower and get dressed up, and I'd get to the meeting early. Because that was the first time I was living a life. And this life was meetings. And so I went to a meeting every day, sometimes twice a day, and I started to learn what it's like to be a human, right? And I know I've shared all this before, but learning how to shake hands, how to hug, how to listen, how to be asked. Hey, man, can you go get the cups? You know, can you get the cups? And you're like, whoa, okay, was that mean? I don't know. Was that, you know, just, it was almost like, you know, human school. And, you know, and then, you know, just starting to feel a little bit better, right? And I've, you know, and I've said before, the worst part about this disease is time, right? We forget. The memories, the pains fade. And eventually you get really better and then life comes. And I've, you know, I've talked about it. You know, of course, I did everything I wasn't supposed to do. Got a girlfriend, a job, a career, a college education. Everything I wasn't supposed to do in the first year I signed up for. And, you know, I went with it. And it would bite me later. But I was so eager to participate in life. And I was so eager to be available and to be able to be counted on. And, but, you know, and it's, and my buddy, Evitt's down in, down south. Evitt's from the south, I'll call him. He's having a, you know, he texts me, he goes, I'm not drinking, but I'm having a really hard time. And I said, you should listen to my podcast. And I don't know, he might. I'm sure the demons are like, why would I listen to his podcast? Well, so I talk about it. I talk about, you know, this period where, you know, the sobriety, we're sober, we're not drinking. And it usually, you know, it's unfortunate. I've said this, and this is my thing lately. I, you know, the three unwritten rules, don't drink, go to a lot of meetings, and just do the best you can. You got to do that for quite a few years. You can do the steps, right? You can be the king of the steps. You can, you know, memorize them, recite them back, forward, backwards, explain all of them. But until you actually live them, we don't really know about them. And so, I'm just, you know, to him, I say it's just a grind, right? We just are grinding. But most of my problems, and I didn't realize this, and so my friend Evitt's probably won't realize this until many years if he can stay sober. because we have to live it. We don't get it quickly. It comes slowly. And but you know, most of the issues that I have today, the issues that I have today live inside the seventh step. The sixth and the seventh step. I was talking to someone the other day. I go, the sixth and seventh step, they're like a freaking weed. Right? They're like a big ass weed. And the sixth step is the shit, the greenery, the stuff you see outside. They're like, ah. My father-in-law said, what is the definition of a weed? Any plant deemed undesirable or unmanageable. Right. And so, you know, the weed, you see the weed and you know, I was telling my dad has, you know, I had to put my dad's house up for sale, and my dad's in the home, and he gets this thing called purple nuts edge, and it grows in his flower beds. It doesn't grow in his grass, thank God, but it grows in his flower beds, and it's a sedge. Here's a little, one day I'm going to start this grass podcast, but a sedge is a triangle. The stem looks like a triangle, so that's how you can tell if it's a sedge. And, you know, I can spray it with a glyphosate, like a Roundup. Doesn't really do anything, so I bought a blowtorch, and I torch it. I torch these weeds because it kills them. But the sixth step is like the plant, the dandelion, the flower, the greenery that you hate, the thing that you're seeing that's deemed undesirable. But the seventh step is the root. And that's harder to get, you know, and if you don't get it all, and that's the one thing about nutsedge, you have to, because I was telling my neighbor who has it, I'm like, you got to, because what I do is I walk my lawn. And whenever I see any purple nutsedge, I just pull it out, a little sedge. I just manage it. He said, well, I heard that aggravates it and makes it grow more. And he's right. You know, the fact is, if you don't get the root, character defect get too big and you try to pull it out, you're going to leave a little root. Some root, some seventh step in there. And that's the sickness. That's the, you know, all the shit that we fix in the end is none of it is why we came here. It's easy to fix a lawn with a bunch of freaking crazy green things growing in your grass, but it's really, really, really hard to get all of the roots. And, you know, and so that's the thing, you know, you gotta really, you know, I think for him, and for most people that struggle, especially after a couple years or a year or whatever it is, you know, it's, you know, we probably have fallen short somewhere. We're not getting the root of the issue. We're just pulling out the greenery. And, it won't do it. That plant will come back and it will come back again. It will come back again. And unfortunately, it gets so bad that, you know, eventually we decide maybe this program isn't for us, or maybe I don't need it, or maybe I don't need meetings. You know, I was talking to my buddy Carl, and I'm like, you know, I go to 3 meetings a week because I told myself that's what I'm going to do. You go to 3 meetings a week, period. I don't care what anybody tells you, in or outside of your head. You go to 3 meetings a week, and that's what I do. And, you know, I'm sick of meetings. I'm on full sick of meetings alert right now. And I went to a meeting on Friday, which I, you know, and that's the other thing. I haven't been going to the Friday. I've been going Monday and Wednesdays at noon. People have been texting me, where have you been? You know, I haven't been to the Wednesday night meeting because I've been going to the Wednesday noon meeting. And I was just like, yeah, I've been going to the noon meetings. And this person's like, that's awesome. No problem. And just making sure you're okay. And I am okay. But I went to the Friday night meeting, and which I hadn't been going to because I've been busy right in the summer. So I said, let me get to that meeting. But now I'm sort of in this place, like, do I want to share? Like, God, you know, because a lot of people in recovery right now are really just barely, you know, pretty new. And sometimes my chats can get a little deep. And so my thing is how I got to get it right back. I got to bring it back to basics. I got to remind myself, right? This is I can't get to make this too complicated. Right? I start talking about demons and devils and spirits and wolves and shit, and people's eyes roll back in their head. And they're like, what the fuck is he talking about? But I remember, you know, I'll, you know, the first step, and that's what this, there was a guy there for his first meeting. And so we went back to the first step, and he shared that, you know, his struggle, you know, the battle's been up and down, and finally it's gotten to this point where now he's ready. And I, listen, that's great. But I will say, and I'll tell everybody, Evitz, and I'll tell anybody this. This is one of the, alcoholism and alcohol was one of the longest running relationships I ever had with a spirit. not a physical, but mental, spiritual battle. It was a spiritual relationship. It was like, you know, a girlfriend. And, you know, I reached out to this, in this relationship on hard times and on good times, on lonely times and surrounded by friends. And I've had relationships in the past that I still think about. Wonder how they're doing, right? Wonder how that alcohol's doing. You know, there's a lot of talk about meth. Meth, when I moved to, you know, I've shared before, you know, I was big into that stuff when I was living out in California. I was into the speed. And when I escaped from California in 94 and ended up here in Delaware, thank God that speed wasn't here. It wasn't here. I looked. I say, man, I'd love to get some of that stuff. I'll just stick to drinking. But the, you know, I was lucky because if had it been here, I don't think I would be. Because that spirit is, I mean, it's an attractive, very attractive spirit, that one. And luckily I've had enough time separated from it that I don't think back. But listen, it's here now. The speed has arrived. And a lot of people are struggling with it. And my buddy Carl was telling me that there was a guy that just, there was in our group that got busted for meth and selling it. And now he's in prison for like a long time. And I used to give him rides home from the meeting. So it's, you know, I have to just keep reminding myself because I don't want to do that. The good thing about that is I couldn't do it. Like when I started drinking again, I could hide that for a while. But, you know, one little snort of that stuff, and I'm cleaning the garage at midnight. And that, you know, I have a set routine, right? I do the same thing, right, every day. And all of a sudden, I'm cleaning the garage at midnight, busted. So I know that, right? But I'm like, God, it'd be nice if I could just... And I remember back in California when I used to sell it to this lady. She goes, I just put a little in my coffee. I said, okay. By the time our relationship was over, I think her hair had fallen out and she lost everything, but she was still putting it in her coffee. But I think maybe I could just put it in my coffee. I need a little energy. No, it's not happening. And luckily I pulled that whole freaking route out because I really have no desire to do that. But listen, I got to say, I hear about it. But you know, it's a relationship. Give this program time, right? You know, go to a lot of meetings. Go to a meeting every day. If you're new, go to a meeting every day. Get in the middle of the herd. Eventually, you will get sick of it, and then you have to regroup and figure out a new plan. But for now, just... And then, you know, work the steps. You know, get the root. All right, let me read something, and then I'll let you go. I hope that was all right. I really didn't have anything to talk about today. I just wanted to come up here, and I'm going to go to a meeting. Hopefully, I get my car back. I've had to check myself on that situation a couple times, too. All right. Oh, yeah. Shortcomings removed. Roots. But now the words of myself, I am nothing, the Father doeth the works, began to carry bright promise and meaning. 12 steps, 12 tradition. When I put the seventh step, excuse me, let me get some water. All right. When I put the seventh step into action, I must remember that there are no blanks to fill in. It doesn't say humbly ask him to fill in the blanks, remove our shortcomings. For years, I filled in the imaginary blank with help me. Give me the courage to, and give me the strength, etc. The steps say simply that God will remove my shortcomings. The only footwork I must do is humbly ask, which for me means asking with the knowledge that of myself I am nothing, the Father within doeth the work. Jesus, Sorry. You know, and that's the other thing. I'm running out of time, but you know, I've been thinking a lot about, because you know, when we talk about God helping us, you know, a person like myself loved the idea, but you know, the peace that comes, the peace, love, and free of fear that comes from living a good life, feels good. It feels good, and if you do it long enough, it feels real good. And so when it says, humbly ask him to fill in the blanks, remove our shortcomings. For years I filled the imaginary blank with help me, give me the courage to, and give me the strength, etc. The steps are simply that God will remove my shortcomings. The only footwork I must do is humbly ask. And the feeling when I started to have some success addressing these shortcomings and the peace, right? Because there was really, you know, obviously there's always a few, but there was a couple big ones. And the couple big ones brought anxiety and fear and worry. And eliminating those eliminated the fear, the worry, and brought in the peace, and which I call today God. And it's, I don't know, man. I don't know. Hope everyone's having a great day. I will catch you later. Bye.